if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 269. This is our Open Championship research pod. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our early thoughts on the action from Royal Liverpool Hoylake. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
We're all good, mate. Looking forward to the Open. Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we have recent major finish stats. Very, very useful. Plus, my Open Championship in-depth research preview. Both are available in the pod description box. We're available on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, even where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. The golf betting show for the Open will be out next Monday, which is the 17th of July. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Keep the reviews coming, please. They're very, very important to us. And keep pressing that five-star button on Spotify. We're creeping towards 500. Right, this one. Title, A-plus from afar. Five stars. Hey, team. I listen to this show all the way from New Zealand. And I really appreciate feeling like I have almost walked the course with you guys during your research shows. The analysis and research is second to none. And the depths you go to always amazes me. Keep up the great work! That is from Scotty. And Scotty is in the beautiful country of New Zealand. Thanks, Scotty.
Brilliant stuff, Scotty. Thank you for that. And it always amazes me, Steve, how different corners of the world are listening to us each and every week. And
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, only on Tuesday we're in the Netherlands.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to come out with a New Zealand accent for us now, are you?
No. My son was trying to do an Australian accent yesterday, and it was absolutely atrocious. But he's very good at Scottish.
Oh, okay.
That'd be the Scottish ancestry in the family, you say.
Yeah,
that's where I get my gingerness from.
Yep.
So he's very good at Scottish, my boy, but not very good at Aussie, mate.
Needs to brush up a little bit.
Now, I was going to bring this up, Paul, because you and I and Barry are going to Wentworth this year, aren't we?
We are, indeed.
We're going to the 2023 BMW PGA Championship on the West Course at Wentworth. And we just want to make listeners aware, because some of you guys and girls might be going to Wentworth. We always go on the Friday. So we're going on Friday. And yeah, just keep an eye out. I'm sure we'll be loitering around the first tee about 9:30, something like that.
Yep.
And then we walk the course, don't we, Paul?
We tend to get around about halfway and then find the bar area around the turn, and then
halfway is a bit generous. It's normally around the sixth, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's a pit stop along the way. I remember. Yeah, but it's interesting because in the past, people have spotted you as the face of the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, and then literally you and I have been chatting by the side of a fairway and. People have turned around to us and recognised the voices and just had a good chat about the everything golf and betting as a result of it, which is always
people
pleasing.
Are tapping us on the shoulder. We're turning around and they're punching us because our tips are so abysmal and they've lost a fortune.
Yeah, but it's good to know that Barry's going to be with us this year as well, which is fantastic. So there'll be the three of us around. So yeah, if you spot us or hear us, then. Yeah, do come and have a chat, please.
Right. Let's move on to the Open Championship, shall we? That's why people are here. I always find this. I get so, so excited. I'll tell you what else I was going to say before we get into this. Listeners, we have got a huge opportunity this year to produce the biggest amount of downloads we've ever done on the Golf Betting System podcast. So if you're seriously into the Golf Betting System podcast, all we're asking you to do, press the share button, retweet on Twitter. If you're having a round of golf over the weekend or Monday or next week, just mention it to your golfing buddies or having a beer in the bar. Just mention it. You know, any tips for the Open this week? Oh, I listened to this podcast, Golf Betting System. Just mention us and that's going to help boost our numbers. And hopefully next week we get our biggest podcast ever. Mm. Right, Hoylake, Royal Liverpool is the home of this year's Open. Now, we last saw this, Paul, 2014, Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, Rory was in his hotel room and doing the rain dance.
Yep.
And lo and behold, the heavens opened and Rory snared the famous claret jug.
Yep.
And do you know what? Looking at the long-term weather forecasts, it might be exactly the same kind of conditions this year.
Oh, well, yeah. We're into a funny spell, aren't we, over here? And we're going to see similar over the weekend at the Scottish Open because the way the weather patterns are working at the moment, there's a lot of scope for these low-pressure systems to develop out in the Atlantic and then just blow across the country. So that's wind and rain. And when we put together the content and the podcast for this week for the Scottish Open, Saturday and Sunday looked a bit iffy. As the week's progressed, it's got progressively worse, and it's going to be fascinating to watch how the guys play on Sunday up at Renaissance, because we're looking at potentially 30 mile an hour winds gusting 40 plus potentially.
Really?
Pretty naughty. And we're over a week out, aren't we? We're a week out from the Open, but there's scope for, you know, all sorts to happen, particularly on the west coast of England. So, yeah, we're going to have to keep very close to it, which is always one of the fascinations of the Open Championship, how it's going to manifest itself from a weather perspective.
There's going to be a few deliberately missing the cut there, then, just to make sure they can get themselves down to Merseyside.
Mm.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I didn't realise that. That would be interesting, then. So scoring conditions yesterday, today, and then it's Armageddon over the weekend.
Yeah, getting progressively worse. This morning, it's going to be a little bit wetter up there today, but the morning players should get a bit of a break today. It's going to get windier in the afternoon. Mm. This afternoon, and then from Sunday's the real day. So if we get any days like that at Hoylake, then you know that could be really interesting for the Open next week. So we keep close to it. Yeah, we'll have another update on Tuesday morning when we pull our final podcast together. Yeah. Where we'll have a much better view of it by then. But don't be surprised if there is quite a bit of wind in the forecast.
We say year after year after year, the scoring on these Open Championship tests is always 100% linked, not overly to the course as such, can be to the actual running conditions of the course, but all about the wind, all about the weather.
Yep.
That dictates that scoring. Is it going to be technical? Is it going to be single digits? Or is it going to be low teens, almost approaching 20 under on some Opens that we've seen recently?
Yeah.
Don't forget, listeners, our tips podcast, as Paul has alluded to, is out on Tuesday of tournament week, which is the 18th of July. Right. I'm going to mention bookmakers and I'm going to mention Boyle Sports for the Open and for this particular 2023 Open Research podcast. Via their Pick Your Place facility, you will be able to choose between 8, 10 and 12 places each way at the 2023 Open, all at 1/5 the odds for the place. Golf Betting System podcast listeners can take advantage of their current welcome offer. Register and place a first bet of £10 and get £10 in free bets plus a £10 casino bonus for those of you 18 plus in the UK. Full details of this customer promotion. Plus, a link through to that very offer with T's and C's are available, as ever, in the podcast description box. Right, okay. Let's get onto some detail around the golf course itself. Now, in my mind, and this kind of, if we were going to say that the Open Championship is played in the same conditions across the whole Open rota, for me, this is one of the easier host courses on that rota.
Yeah.
We've seen a couple of Open renewals here since 2000. Winning totals have been 18 under 270 strokes. That was Tiger Woods in 06. It's not a bad winning lineup really here, is it? And 17 under 271 strokes from Rory McIlroy last time in 2014.
Yeah.
That, to me, highlights a course that the Royal and Ancient could not defend solely via course setup alone. Mm. Now, interestingly enough, and I dragged this out yesterday, I just went into the official numbers as to what the wind was doing at the Open in 2014. Because you can look at 17 under and you can go, oh, it must have been pretty calm and barely any wind. Well, yep. You listen to this. Thursday. Winds north to northwest, which looks like, I'm looking at early stages, it does look like the prevailing westerlies from what I'm seeing most of the week.
Yeah.
10 to 15 miles an hour on Thursday, gusting to 30. Highs 78 Fahrenheit. On the Friday, partly cloudy, sprinkles of rain in the morning. South to southeast wind, so completely reversing on the Friday.
Mm.
15 to 25 miles an hour, 80. And then over the weekend, the wind dissipated 8 to 15, 8 to 15, both from northwesterly direction. Now, to put that into some context, McIlroy was 12 under through 36 holes. In weather conditions that were 10 to 15, gusting 30, 10, 15 to 25 on the Friday. Now, he was four clear, though, of Dustin Johnson, who was second alone, minus eight. And then in third place, tied, there were six players that included Ricky Fowler, Sergio Garcia.
Yep.
They were at six under par.
Mm.
It then eased in terms of wind, and certainly Fowler and Garcia kicked on across Saturday and Sunday to close down McIlroy to, I think it was two shots in the end. He was at 17, Garcia at 15, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's just worthy of note for me. If you're seeing 15 to 25 mile an hour winds, don't automatically think that actually par's going to be a good score here. It does seem scorable if you're playing fantastic golf, even in pretty windy conditions. So that's my point there.
Yeah, I think.
But go on. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, no. I think that the other thing to consider there is probably the softness of the turf.
Yeah.
And you talked about Rory's rain dance before, and you know when we try and match Rory to certain tasks and certain events and certain conditions, if it's soft and calm, great. If it's soft and a little bit windy, then he can still contend. It's when it's firm and windy that we tend to see Rory struggle a little bit. And that's, again, any course that's got a bit of cut in it at any point is going to lend itself to low scoring for these professionals. And we're going to have to keep an eye on how much rain does fall on the course between now and Thursday, and of course what's going to happen during the course of the actual tournament days themselves. But even with a bit of wind, as you say, I think you're unlikely to see a scenario where people are hanging around level par. I think it needs to be particularly dry and particularly firm combined with that kind of wind for it to be a really tough test.
I don't think I'm talking out of turn here, but I'm not. I mean, this would have been a different conversation in May when we were having such great weather.
Mm.
But I don't see a scenario where we're seeing 2006 and everything's baked out.
I remember the year, and it was, we were talking mid-30s.
That's when you were young and in love, Paul. Do you remember?
Yeah, it seems like a lifetime ago. But It was the days leading up to it, it was kind of mid 30s, so 90, 95 Fahrenheit, baking hot. And the conditions of the course that Tiger won on back then were, chalk and cheese to what Rory won on in 2014, and likely what we will see next week as well. So I think if we were picking correlations between the years, then you'd certainly err on the side of 14 over 06 at this stage.
Before the end of the show, we'll just go through the soft golf course metrics just to highlight some players that on our predictor model are very good in yielding soft conditions, just in case, just so that we can all make a note of players that do like a little bit of cut, if that's going to be the actual position that we're dealing with. Now, also, there is, I wouldn't say a complication, but we're looking at a different golf course this year. I'm not saying it's fundamentally changed. You know, this isn't a situation like we see at, say, Muirfield Village a few months ago, when Jack Nicklaus has ripped the course up and basically added 400 yards to it and changed the look and the feel of a lot of the holes. Because you can't do that. It's Royal Liverpool, it's Hoylake. But they have changed the format, so we'll go into that in a short while. Royal Liverpool Golf Club, Hoylake, Merseyside. Designer, Harry Colt, 1895 original. You can't beat a Harry Colt links. Mm. Martin Ibea made some additional changes in 2020. Now, course type, clearly coastal, clearly links. Short in its length. To be fair, I might actually recategorise that and say it's medium length, because we're looking at 7,383 yards. So I am going to recategorise that. It's more medium. It's a par 71, and that's the point. Par 71. Woods, McIlroy were playing on par 72. So we'll go into the difference and what has caused that in a short while. Holes with water in play, one. Fairways, fescue in terms of their agronomy. Rough, fescue with tall fescue. We'll go into that in a short while. Greens, they're a mix. There's some bent grass, there's some poana, there's some fescue. Course scoring average in 2014, bearing in mind this was a major, it played at 0.77 over par across the field, which actually made it the 10th most difficult of 48 PGA Tour courses that year. Mm. So that doesn't sound onerous, and I think a lot of that would have been down to that soft turf condition that we saw. It just kept drizzling throughout as well. Not only did it get deluged the night before, but you'd wake up in the morning, oh, we had another few millimetres overnight, and Rory's smiling and happy and jaunty. It's like, okay, yes. You know, it's like you dialed up the weather god. Yeah. Can you sort this out for me? Very, very congressional-like for the US Open victory he'd had earlier. Right.
Yeah.
Now, these are the key features, Paul, in my mind. Stop me or add to them. Six holes here, bearing in mind we've got four par threes, so we're talking about 14 holes. Six of them have genuine in-play out-of-bounds.
Yep.
You make a mistake off the tee, you are out-of-bounds on six of the 14 non-par threes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't tend to see that very often these days, do you?
No.
I so remember Sandwich and Dustin Johnson in it OB on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Wasn't he?
It does happen. So bear that in mind, listeners. Six holes feature genuinely at risk out of bounds. So make a note of that. They've lengthened the two par fives on the back side this year. 15 named Field and 18 named Dunn by around 40 and 60 yards respectively. To be fair, 2014, the par fives were getting ripped to shreds.
Yeah.
So they've put new tee boxes in. So that's effectively your extra 100 yards on the yardage of the course 2014 versus 2023. I think this quote that's on my that research preview is very, very important. He said this pre-2014 Open. I can't do Phil's voice, so bear with me. So the thing I really like about Royal Liverpool is the same thing I liked about Muirfield, bearing in mind that Phil was coming here as the reigning Open champion. Those last 20 to 30 yards short of the green, where oftentimes you have to land a golf ball, it will continue to bounce onto the green if you strike it properly. So what he's basically saying there, a lot of these Open Championship venues pre-green have bumps, humps and hollows, and you can hit what the professional would think is a fantastic shot. It hits the ground and it does things that the professional doesn't want the ball to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So it brings luck into the equation. What Phil's saying here is that Hoylake, if you're playing well and your approach shots are on point, you're going to get rewarded. So that's worthy of note too. The other thing I've got here, relatively flat putting surfaces.
Yeah. Well, it's a relatively flat course, full stop, isn't it?
Exactly.
You've got the typical linksy features, you know, your deep bunkers, your pot bunkers, fescue fairways, fescue rough, which you talked about, those long, you know, that kind of goes from knee height to waist height, doesn't it, as you get deeper into the rough. I think one of the points with some of these changes to tee boxes as well is that they've brought some of these pot bunkers in the middle of fairways into the driving zone of the, you know, the current professional, the current distance that professionals are driving. So it's going to it's made it more relevant, I guess, in terms of the current crop of professionals out there. How that impacts scoring, we'll see. They have changed the par. The par is down to 71 now. So the 17th, I forget if you just mentioned it, it's now par 3, isn't it?
Yeah, but the main change on that, Paul, is they've changed the 10th. Now, that hole is called Far, which was a bit of a laugh because it was a 532-yard par 5 in 2014.
Yeah,
so it was a long way from being far. And they ripped that hole apart. Just to put that into context, Rory McIlroy birdied it 3 of the 4 days. He won. Mm.
Yeah.
And there were eagles and all manner of stuff happening on that hole. They have changed that now to a plus 500-yard par 4.
Yeah, that's right. So that's
so there's your main change.
Mm.
So effectively, that 17 under, I mean, are you going to be making a birdie on a 500-yard par 4, one of the longest par 4s on the course? You're certainly not going to be making 3 out of 4 days.
No.
So that's going to be taking a couple of digits out of a winning score, in my opinion, if you were talking about level playing field, level turf conditions, level wind and rain. Yeah.
Yep.
So they have definitely made a move here to make it slightly more stretching. But bearing in mind, we've also moved on 9 years in terms of player capabilities, technology, and just the way that modern golfers just shoot lights out. Mm. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at a similar winning score.
Yeah, in that kind of bracket, isn't it? Mid-teens.
Yeah. Low teens, 19s, 20s, or you think that 15 to 17 area again?
I think it entirely depends on what we see with the wind, Steve.
Unfair question, sorry.
Yeah, I think if it's 10 to 15 miles an hour, I think it will get into that upper teens. If it's 15 to 20 plus, then I think it will be 13, 14, 15. If it's really gnarly, then who knows? It could be way below that, but we'll see.
To tap into Paul's comment about the 17th, yes, it's a new hole. It's called Little Eye. It's got one of these infinity greens where you're just going to see just lots and lots of content of the green and then the beautiful water beyond and the Welsh coast.
Yep.
It plays at around about 150 yards. From what I've seen of the hole, you can't go long.
No.
If you go seriously long, you're in the water. If you're kind of just a little bit long, you're in deep bunkers. They've also got sort of kind of sandy traps that aren't bunkers, and the fescue is just ridiculous.
Mm.
You're in a whole host of trouble. But yeah, they basically added 100 yards to the course, and they've taken the par from 72 to 71. That's how they're trying to defend the course this year. I still think it'll be scorable, but yeah, it does depend, of course, on the weather. Now, where I'm at on this, in terms of keen, you know, we're looking here. We're looking for clues, aren't we? We're looking for clues. I mean, when you look back at St Andrews and Cam Smith and the likes of a Cam Young, you kind of got to the feeling with it that St Andrews is so unique. It's got fairways that basically cater for two holes at a time. Driving accuracy was of no importance whatsoever. It was all approach. It was all putting and short game. I don't see that here as much.
No.
It's a very flat property, as you said. It used to be a horse racing track. So whatever wind you get here is seriously felt.
Mm.
I'm not suggesting that St Andrews wasn't dead plan flat, because that also is. The only real towering sand dunes you get here are pretty much on the 11th, which is the par 4 punch bowl. Apart from that, it's pretty damn flat. To be fair, from a viewing perspective, I'd have thought it's pretty difficult to get some decent spots where you can see more than one hole.
Mm.
But for all it lacks in topography, Royal Liverpool gains. And this is where I think the key is here. Tall fescue in play on all holes. We've also mentioned the six genuine out-of-bounds areas off the tee.
Yep.
All par fours and par fives feature, and this is really critical. When you look at the fairways, they look kind of average on width. And then you get 2 to 3 yards of what I've categorised as semi-rough. It's not even thick rough, really. And once you stray beyond those 2 to 3 yards, if you're missing a fairway, you are instantly into knee to waist high yellow fescue.
Mm.
And I've put here, the transition from fairway to tall fescue is both amazingly stark, but also amazingly small in terms of miss distance. And once you're in that fescue, you've got, it's just totally the lap of the gods. You could be in a great lie. You could be in an absolutely hellish lie.
Yep.
And that, to me, is so, so critical about this golf course. And you can kind of see this from the winning numbers that we saw from both Woods and from McIlroy back in 06 and 2014, whereby they're, I mean, we know for a fact, don't we, going back to 06, it was famous for Tiger taking 2 iron off everything, and or maybe, yeah, he basically ditched his five wood in the bag and took a 2 iron. He hit 48 of 56 fairways. He was first for fairways hit across the whole field.
Yeah,
that's Tiger Woods. That is just pure strategy.
It was.
I mean, the when he won the Western Open on his previous outing, he was actually 59th for driving accuracy. So he's gone there and he's basically ditched the 5 wood. We're going 2 iron. We're going straight off the tee. Yep. We've got to be on the short stuff. Avoid the hay. You can even say the same for Rory Poole. He hit 37 of 56 fairways, and that was basically 2 in 3.
Yep.
He was in the top 20 for driving accuracy, and he bombed it on average 328 yards. Interestingly, that year in 2014, the only guy that hit it as long as Rory McIlroy, but not straight, was Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, Koepka finished quite a long way down the yeah. field, didn't he?
I mean, that's 2014, yeah. But yeah.
I don't know.
I genuinely think, Paul, that short hitters are in play here, but you need to be looking for those drivers that are studiously both medium to longer off the tee and straight.
Mm.
Because they're going to have an advantage. They have to.
Yeah. If you bear in mind that Woods averaged just 291 off the tee, and as you said, a lot of that was with taking irons off the tee rather than Woods or driver. Then it does bring different players into the mix, because if you can position yourself, and you talk about this this fescue, the long fescue rough, if it has been raining, which looks really quite likely, you know, that's not just going to be long and difficult. It's going to be long, wet and difficult. And that's, you know, your club's going to be wrapped around the rough, the grass, you know, desperately trying to find balls that have sunk to the bottom. It's going to be tough. So you've got real penalties on the fairways in terms of these pot bunkers you need to make sure you're navigating your way around or over. And then if you're missing fairways badly, as you said, it's not even as if you're missing them wildly. It goes really quite quickly from fairway to the hay. I think if there's an Open Championship where there is a premium on accuracy, then this is going to be one of the ones that swings that pendulum towards that particular attribute.
Woods ranked 10th. And McIlroy ranked 6th for ball striking the week they won.
Yep.
Bearing in mind, we haven't got genuine strokes gain data from 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly nothing from 06. But yes, long and straight tends to work everywhere. But I genuinely think, you know, at the Open this year, it's going to be a huge advantage. And that, for me, puts me off a player. I'm talking in terms of winning here. I always do. It's winning rather than placing. That totally puts me off a player like Cam Smith.
Yeah.
Who can be amazingly erratic off the tee. I mean, when he won at Centurion last week on LIV, he was 51.9% for fairways hit and 50%, I believe. Or is it was either 50% for fairways hit and 51.9% for greens in regulation or the other way around.
Yeah.
But clearly, he was just chipping and scrambling like Billy Goat Gruff. And apparently, he putted at 1.24 putts per GIR, which is a number I've never seen in my life.
That is Cam Smith for you, though, isn't it?
It is, yes.
For him to be able to get away with that, replicating those numbers, it would have to be blowing 40 miles an hour every day and everyone missing fairways, everyone missing greens. And it just comes down to a grind of chipping and putting and you know, salvaging par and making the odd birdie as and when is possible. And
it would need to be 2013 Muirfield where Mickelson won.
Yeah.
Absolutely lightning fast. Yeah. But that isn't going to be the case.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think we've spoken enough about the course, but I genuinely... I was on Pat Mayo yesterday and I said to Pat, I think a key number here is the number available on the PGA Tour website, which is around the distance of your miss off the tee.
Yep.
You don't want people ranking 189 for distance missed off the fairway. You want guys that even if they're missing are literally it's consistency of driving off the tee, isn't it? It's that repetitiveness. Can you be hitting lots and lots of fairways this week? And when you do miss, you're trying to miss it in that semi. You're not going all the way into the hay.
Mm.
That's the number if you can find it.
Yeah,
it's out there.
Yeah, now I get that.
I was having a flick through it in bed last night, and number one on that ranking was Colin Morikawa, and that doesn't surprise you because the guy is iron straight and fairly long.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely in play next week, Morikawa.
Yep,
definitely in play. That's the sort. I don't know if you've got anything else to add about the course, or are you happy with where we're at on that one?
No, I think that we've covered most of it. The only other thing to pick out of Rory's and Tiger's stats is that they both scrambled and putted well enough to get round and to win. And Rory was fourth for scrambling, sixth for putts per GIR. Bear in mind, as you said, we've only got traditional stats here. Tiger was 13th and 12th. So it's a great all-round test with that kind of emphasis more on keeping yourself out of trouble in the first instance. And there's also going to be something here. And it's the same that you get with all of these majors. It's players who can put a bad hole or a bad break immediately out of their mind and not be tilted by having to come out sideways from a bunker or having a bad break which bounces from the fairway into the tall rough. It's having that mental strength to be able to manage your way around and to put those breaks out of your mind, move on to the next hole and away you go. But yeah, I think if we're picking the numbers out, then we've kind of covered them there. But yeah, you're still going to need to be able to putt and scramble well enough. And again, if you look at the likes of a Scottie Scheffler and just eyeballing him again yesterday at the Scottish Open, long game, fantastic. There was a few misses there, but in general, really good. But the putting still is just missing far, far too many. And tough call.
I noticed yesterday in Scotland he was 2 under, and you look at the stats, it was all typical, and then negative 1.2 on the greens.
Yeah, but it
doesn't
Scottie,
go away, does it, at the moment?
No, this is where Scottie's at, and he managed to salvage a 2 under round yesterday by missing everything. And the day and the week that he puts it all together and the putter clicks, he's just going to absolutely walk a tournament. I think as punters, we were all walking that tightrope because you can oppose him. And then one week it is going to work and he's just going to mop up. But yeah, whether it's next week or not.
What price do you think Scotty might be if Rory wins the Scottish Open?
I think you'll get, tens? What is he at the moment? Nines. I didn't
Nines.
Note it down. Yeah, I think Rory will be trimmed in a little bit and the likes of Scotty will move out. And yeah, you might get tens. I doubt the bookies would want to go much further than that because of the each way element. And if you look at his performances, his results over the last few months, he's been just peppering those top, top three, top four, top five positions each and every week. So as a punter presented with, and we'll get 11, 12 places each way next week. If you've been offered 10 to one about a player who habitually finishes inside the top five, as an each-way proposition, plenty of punters will take that one as an each-way punt. And I get that. I really do. But whether he goes and wins or not, and if we're talking about trying to find out that player, the single player that's going to prevail over everyone else, it's a different combination or a different question, I think.
I've looked at Tiger Woods, although he's a red herring, let's be frank. Rory McIlroy, you could kind of say he's a red herring as well, but at least Sergio Garcia and Ricky Fowler. Players here who have either won or contended at Hoylake. And I always look at this clearly from an American perspective because I'm a PGA Tour follower. There was one golf, well, there were a few golf courses actually, and we were talking about this off mic. But there's definitely, Tiger Woods, two-time winner at the Players. And for Tiger Woods, that's actually quite low grade. As we know, he was dominating on winning 6-7 times on different courses in his pomp. McIlroy's won the Players. Garcia's won the Players. Ricky Fowler's won the Players. And actually, in my mind, the Players is all about, apart from Cam Smith as ever, who clearly barely hit a fairway, barely hit a green, and when he was on the green was making 55-footers all week. But Sawgrass can be mightily windy, can be pretty nippy, because they play it in March these days, and can be pretty frisky on the greens as well. And it's the course where if you're missing fairways, you're pretty much in the water around Sawgrass. So again, you've got that kind of out-of-bounds element. The out-of-bounds there is wet. The out-of-bounds element here is you're picking up. Mm. So I get that. I do actually see as well, if you're just looking at this golf course and you're looking for potential, I mean, it's difficult. If you're looking for potential golf courses on the open rota that do link to this, clearly, Phil Mickelson's told us Muirfield. I don't think you're going to get too much out of that because the last one we saw at Muirfield was 2013. And also Muirfield was absolutely like playing on glass that year. But anyway, Muirfield is a comp course, according to Phil Mickelson. And I take his word for gospel on that. The other one I did think of, just, you know, just looking through golf courses and just looking through images and video and whatever, is Royal Troon. And Royal Troon also works from a TPC Sawgrass perspective because, if you remember, that was the great head-to-head between Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. Henrik, of course, being another Players Championship winner. So that's I do like that Sawgrass element. If you're seeing or interested in a player that's done some serious damage at the Players, I don't think that's a bad angle. Now, I can also take that forward to another Florida Golf stop-off. And Florida Golf is like this, isn't it? Bay Hill, PGA National, where they play the Honda Classic, although the Honda have now withdrawn. Sawgrass. We're talking about late February, early March. We're talking about not overly warm and also pretty windy. So, you know, it's linksy in that kind of kind of respect.
Yeah.
You look at Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods only played the Honda Classic once. He finished second. McIlroy's won the Honda Classic. Garcia's finished second at the Honda Classic. Ricky Fowler's won the Honda Classic. So I genuinely think PGA National, Bay Hill, Sawgrass, if you're seeing players that play well at those tracks, I don't think that's a bad look. Okay? The other one that jumps out at me as well is TPC Boston, where they used to play... God, now you have to rewind here, don't you? They used to play the Deutsche Bank, and then that became the Dell Technologies. I think the last one was called the Northern Trust. In fact, it was, because it's on my screen here. That was the one that Dustin Johnson won at 30 under par, with Harris English second at 19 under par. And what did we say earlier? Dustin Johnson was tied for second here after 36 holes at Hoylake. Anyway, Tiger Woods has won at Boston. Rory McIlroy's won twice at Boston. Garcia has a couple of top fives. And Ricky Fowler has won at TPC Boston. So those, personally, are golf courses that if I'm seeing format, that's a tick in my box for next week.
Boston's interesting because...
a lot of fescue there, isn't there?
Yeah, it certainly has got some linksy... connotations, got some features that you could certainly put down in that kind of aesthetic category at least.
Definitely. So,
food for thought that.
So food for thought there. I'm looking at the Northern Trust 2020 leaderboard. The last time the PGA Tour visited there, Harris English second, Daniel Berger third, Kevin Kisner and Scottie Scheffler tied for fourth. Scheffler won the Sawgrass this year as well. So, and Pat Mayo also brought this out, and we both said to each other yesterday, "Are we going mad?" But clearly, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, Ricky Fowler—they're not exactly bad players around Augusta National either. And you can kind of say, has Augusta National got any kind of link to this as a course whatsoever? No. Or is it simply that the best players play the best golf at Augusta National? That's probably yes. Also, so yeah, just different course perspectives there. Now I've got a few trends, and I know that you're a fan of a trend, Paul, on these research podcasts. Do you want to go first? Because I'm sure that you've got a beautiful, juicy trend there that you want to tell the listeners.
Well, there's lots, isn't there? And the beauty of the Open, I think the Masters is the one that you can really dig into because we stay at the same course each and every year. But there certainly are some nice trends to pick out with the Open. If you look at current form, and you go all the way back to 2010, which was Louis Oosthuizen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Each of the winners had a top three finish in one of their previous eight starts. And if you look at the last six winners in isolation, each of them had a win or a runner-up finish in one of their last nine starts. So some really recent, seriously contending form is well worth looking at. 16, so you come back to the start of the century, 16 of the 22 winners had a season win as well. So they had won in that physical season prior to the Open Championship. So in the in the 6 or 7 months prior to their win, they had also notched a victory. And that's
some of those were quite recent victories as well, weren't
absolutely
they?
Yeah,
I'm seeing Molinari, he'd won on the PJ Tour, so had Jordan Spieth the outing before he arrived in the UK. Stenson first at the BMW International, two outings before he won the Open. So, yeah, some of that's quite direct wins, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I don't think it hurts to come in. Barry's not with us today, as I'm sure the listeners have realised, but he'll be with us on Tuesday. But Barry will always preach at this, that picking the player or the players that seem to have the very best incoming form is, one of the easier ways to whittle down your field for this. And that's almost stating the blinding obvious, isn't it? Pick a player who's playing well. But golf and golf betting isn't always like that. Whereas coming into an Open Championship, if you've got someone who's got blindingly obvious form coming in, that may not be a bad place to start. Just put into context, if we're talking about wins in the season, if you pick out this field, and we've got 153 players confirmed of the 156 so far, you can get rid of two-thirds of the entire field if you're being as brutal as removing anyone who hasn't won in that year. Now, it's a dangerous game. This is a dangerous game, because if we say that, we're getting rid of the likes of Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Tyrrell Hatton, Cam Young. I'm sure Cam Young will be popular with many punters again. Colin Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood, Bryson, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, all sorts of players who've got some relevance or some history in the Open Championship. But 16 out of 22 is a big proportion. You know, it's well over 70%.
Yeah.
For me, I sometimes get too, go down a rabbit hole with these trends and get too specific with it, and then miss a blindingly obvious play. And trends are there to be broken, but it's well worth considering as well. I think another thing that is fact that you can't you can't dispute with this is that the last 10 winners, each of them was inside the top 40 of the world rankings as well. So if you were to ignore everyone left out of your field then, and we're down to a field of 51 out of 153 by removing the non-winners, of the ones that are in the, not inside the top 40, you can get rid of the likes of Emiliano Grillo, probably not winning anyway, Lucas Herbert, turned him into a Frenchman there, Lucas Herbert, Rasmus, who won last week, Rasmus Højgaard, Pablo Larrazabal, Marcel Siem, both of them multiple winners. Or winners on the DP World Tour this season. Padraig Harrington, who's played some fantastic stuff on the seniors, and put a decent effort in yesterday at the Scottish Open as well. And there's been chatter about Padraig for the European Ryder Cup team as well, isn't there? And he'll always have his supporters at an Open Championship. If you remove the players that aren't in the top 40 and those haven't won, you're down to 21 players, Steve, before you even start.
Wow.
Which is pretty bad, helps. Really. Yeah, it does. Another trend that you can pick out, the past 10 winners, each of them had a top 25 finish in one of their previous three major championships. So players...
Say that one again, sorry.
So the past 10 winners, each of them had a top 25 or better in one of their previous three major starts.
That's interesting.
So, again, the logic there, isn't there? You're giving yourself a chance. You're giving yourself a sight or a major championship that can give you that bit of confidence that you can move forward and contend and compete and potentially win an Open Championship or a major. And again, there's players that you can, you know, these are names that we've mentioned a few times and pods of players that just don't pull it together at, you know, recent majors. But Tony Finau doesn't fit that. Sam Burns doesn't fit that. Siwoo Kim doesn't fit that. Jason Day, Max Homer. And we've talked about Max again at the, you know, we talked about him at the Masters. We talked about him at the US Open where he was well fancied. But the performances on the major championship level just aren't there at the moment from Max. So
I can be more specific than that.
Go on then.
Go back to Henrik Stenson in 2015. All Open Championship winners had finished in the top 11 on one of their three previous majors.
Yep.
So that list of players that haven't finished in the top 11 this year, three majors. Homer, yes. Finau, yes. Bradley. Hatton, who's going to get a whole heap of steam next week. Burns, Justin Thomas, Sung Jae Im, Jason Day, Brian Harman, Shane Lowry, Hideki Matsuyama. So yeah, by the numbers, there's players mentioned twice there, isn't there?
Yeah.
They're not winning.
No, and. You know, I'm on Hatton this week. You mentioned Hatton and watched him again yesterday, and he's so frustrating because he's so close to playing some fantastic golf, but any adversity, and it's just knocking him right off the scent. And I wonder at an Open Championship where you are going to get the odd bad bounce, you are going to get the odd bad break, you're going to miss the odd putt. And he was missing putts from 3-4 feet yesterday, which, you know, you could see were just winding him up. And then he misses another one because he's wound up that he's missed a previous one, and then he misses a fairway or sticks it in the sand or whatever he does. And I just wonder about the temperament still. I kind of gave him a chance this week, and I'd be surprised if he pulls it around from where he is now. But yeah, as you say, he will get some steam next week. He'll be popular. If he does what Till tends to do, he'll probably put a decent round in today and finish inside the top 10. And he'll be a popular pick for next week.
But yeah. Last three winners, Paul. And I'm not saying that this is the be-all and end-all. The last three winners have all played in the Scottish Open or the Irish Open in the case of Lowry. So they've actually come to these shores.
Yep.
They've played competitively. I noticed John Rahm is in Ireland playing some links golf.
Ballybunion, yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought Brooks Koepka's in Florida, not playing any links golf. He'll turn up on Tuesday, walk nine holes and say he's ready. That's what Brooks does. He goes to the green, he looks back down the hole and I know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So that's Brooks's that's Brooks's recce for next week. But prior to those guys, and I think this is an interesting angle as well. So the last three all played this side of the Atlantic before they won, and in many cases they didn't play very well. Colin Morikawa, but you know, it's a tick in a box. Prior to that, Molinari, when he won. He literally jumped straight off the John Deere Classic Charter. He'd finished second there and he'd won the previous week at TPC Potomac. Red hot form. Mm. Jordan Spieth didn't play anything over here competitively. His last outing on the PGA Tour, he won the Travelers. So these are people that are doing very well in this short space between the US Open and the Open Championship. Mm. Henrik Stenson. He did play the Scottish Open. He finished 13th. Lovely. That's the kind of form you like, isn't it? And something like that. Like Cam Smith last year, finished 10th at the Scottish Open. The outing before that, as we said earlier in the pod, he won the BMW International on the European Tour, as it was then called. And we could even go back to Zach Johnson in 2015. Again, hadn't been this side of the Atlantic whatsoever. He came off the John Deere Classic Charter where he'd finished third. And the previous outing to that was sixth at the Travellers. So for me, you're either looking for players that have had an outing over here at the Scottish Open or haven't done that, but have been in the top five of a PGA Tour event this side of the US Open.
Yeah, yeah. That bit of...
That's very, very black and white, that trend.
Yeah, that bit of very recent form.
Yeah. And of course, that brings a lot of names into play, doesn't it? Ricky Fowler, Colin Morikawa.
Sure. Yeah.
Because the PGA Tour fields have been weak, relatively, you know, John Deere Classic, there wasn't any real elite players in there. I mean, you could throw Cam Young in there, couldn't you? Did he finish fifth or sixth? So that's the kind of player that you might say, well, actually, they haven't played in Scotland this week, but they're clearly in good form. And Cam Young's another that has got that top 11 finish at a major because he finished seventh at the Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking here. Morikawa's had some decent finishes in majors this year. 10th at the Masters. So, you know, these are players you can't discount.
It's a slightly different dynamic this year, isn't it? With and as it was last year with the co-sanctioned Barbasol. So I had a quick look through yesterday. The only player that I could see in the field at the Barbasol who's playing the Open was Jazz Janawatanand, I think. Other than that, it's players that are playing over in Scotland. If you want some more of the trends, Dave Tindall picked out one and his trends piece on Twitter is well worth looking at. And that kind of backs up what you just said there, Steve, which was 8 out of the last 10 Open winners had played the week before, whether that be the Scottish or the Irish or on a PGA Tour event and then came straight over. So, you know, again, you could get quite brutal with your statistics or your getting your shortlist and only pick players effectively who've played the Scottish Open. Again, you're going to be getting rid of players then that you may not want to. You know, all of the LIV players, none of the LIV players are playing this week. So you'd instantly get rid of the likes of a Brooks Koepka and a Cam Smith if you were to be as brutal as saying that I'm only picking players that have played or physically playing this week. But
8 out of 10
yeah.
played the week before.
Yep. It's a consideration. So
the exceptions there then would be Lowry, because he played the Irish Open, didn't play the Scottish. And would be Jordan Spieth, who came, Christ, he won the Travellers. So that would have been 3 weeks prior to the Open, yeah, maybe four. Interesting stuff. Very interesting. There's definitely ways of cutting the cake, aren't there, to exclude names for this?
Oh, there is. Oh, yeah, big style. There was another tweet, and this was from a guy called Patrick McDonald, who writes for CBS Sports. I'm not going to claim this is any of my own analysis, but I thought this was interesting. I thought it was interesting, and credit to Patrick for picking this data out. And he quoted that the last 10 winners had averaged averaged above 2 strokes gained total per round. In their 3 months prior to victory. So players that are consistently playing top golf. And that kind of, again, just ties into this current form, you know, assertion that you need to generally be playing some really good stuff. And you know, I've just done some analysis of my own and I've just to try and get a feel of this. And if you were to cut the players left in my kind of shortlist from here off at, plus 1.5 strokes gained total per round for the last, well, going back to the start of April, then you're getting an even shorter list here. I end up with a short list of 10 players if I apply all of the number, or not all of the numbers, all of the trends that we've discussed in the last 10 minutes or so. I'll rattle through them quickly because the winner may well be in here. It may well form part of my thought process for next week. But as I said, I'm not going to get massively hung up on this because I'm not going to exclude someone just because they marginally missed out on this. Anyway, in world ranking order, the 10 I come back with from the trends are Scotty Scheffler, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Cam Smith, Matt Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler and Justin Rose are the only 10 that fit all the criteria that I have run through so far. Now, not many surprising names there, although Wyndham Clark hasn't got a particularly good Open Championship record, but seems to be a different beast nowadays. Scotty Scheffler, pretty damn obvious, really, as is Rahm and McIlroy. But yeah, perhaps perhaps the winners in that list of 10. Barry
Fitzpatrick's
would be...
interesting, isn't
yeah.
he? He's had a 10th this year at the Masters. So since that US Open victory, 21st at the Open, 10th at the Masters, a miscut at the when defending the US Open, miscut at the PGA, and a 17th when defending the US Open last time out. He's there or thereabouts, isn't he?
It's this niggling neck thing going on with him that just crops up every now and again. And yeah, you know, beware the injured golfer. We saw that with Rasmus Højgaard last week, and you can't, you know, anything can happen. The, you know, a physio can do the work that's going to get a player through 4 days pain free, and it's a non consideration. But you know, same with Jordan Spieth. How is his wrist? You know, he had a pretty poor round yesterday at the Scottish Open, and again, he's going to have fantastic support next week. But we're not seeing or hearing whether that's 100% or 90% or 70%. You know, where exactly are we with it? So lots of question marks, lots of considerations ahead of next week.
Best coastal golf players last 5 years on the PGA Tour. Mm. This data is all from our predictor models. So we have a rolling five-year time frame that just constantly moves. So last 5 years, 11th, Scotty Scheffler. Tie for 8th, Finau, Mickelson, Thomas. Patrick Reed at 7. Justin Rose at 6. Colin Morikawa at 5. Xander at 4. Cam Smith at 3. Victor Hovland at 2. Victor Hovland at 2.
Mm.
John Rahm at 1. Clearly, John Rahm and Torrey Pines make up a huge proportion of his total score.
Yep.
But he can play coastal golf. Didn't he? I can remember him. Was it Ireland or Scotland 1 year that he played on the European Tour and he did really, really well on one of those? He might have won it.
Yeah, and there's, of course, the Spanish Open that he won. It's kind of
it's in Madrid, so it's about 5,000 miles from the sea, but it looks like a links course.
Yeah, it does. It looks and feels like an inland links, which,
yeah.
Again, there's relevance there in some capacity.
It's interesting that he's in Ireland, clearly getting his links, you know, touch sensors up to speed.
Yep.
At soft golf courses, we mentioned this. If you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but if there's some cut in the fairways and the greens are on a little bit on the receptive side, I'll just take you through soft golf course performers over the last 5 years as well. So when you're using this this variable within our predictor model, this is the data that you're effectively tapping into. JT is at 1. Koepka is at 2. Cantlay is at 3. I've got a feeling, a thing with Cantlay, you know. Doesn't win tournaments unless it's about 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Victor Hovland at 4, tied with Rory. Cam Smith is at 6. Keegan Bradley at 7. Sungjae Im 8. Adam Scott at 9. I believe he's top 10 last two times they've come to Hoylake. And our old podcast friend, Emiliano Griot, is at 10. Just above Paul, this will amuse you, Scott Piercy. He was another one in the old days of McIlroy. Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman on a soft golf course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Other names slightly lower, Jason Day, Kevin Kisner, Justin Rose, Xander, Webb Simpson, John Rahm. John Rahm is actually quite low down that for a player who is clearly in the top two in the world. From a points total, he's less than half. He's got less than half the points of a Justin Thomas who's at the top. Just worthy of note.
Yeah, it must more be down to the the events that he's played, and because you'd imagine if he'd have played exactly the same number or type of events that he'd have.
Yeah, I suppose so. Lucas Glover's in there as well, and I see that he started very nicely for you, Paul, at the Barbasol yesterday.
Yeah, thanks. Kiss of death there, Steve.
Did you have him first round leader? Of course you didn't.
No.
Of course you didn't. I think that's... Well, I'm pretty much out of content, Paul. What about you?
Yeah, I think from here, it's a case of assimilating all of the many angles that we've got and trying to come up with those, that very, very short number of names that we're happy to punt on for next week. And I've not placed any anti-post bets at all on this. As we're sitting here right now and it's 9:15 on Friday morning over here in the UK, there's still no final markets out from any of the bookies. They're still all sitting on the anti-post markets. So anti-post each way terms as well. So I suspect I won't be placing anything until Sunday, Monday. And then, my final preview and thoughts will be out.
I've got one bet.
Go on.
I placed it a few days ago. I took 23 on Betfair Exchange, or was it 24? Can't remember. On Victor Hovland.
Okay.
That's my one and only Open Championship bet that is there, placed.
Yeah. And I know Barry's on Ricky Fowler. He's gone there. He's gone in early with Ricky, reinvested some of his winnings from the other week. Other than that, the three of us will run through our final thoughts on Tuesday next week.
We will. Paul, thank you for your time. I hope your research over the weekend goes speedily.
Thank you.
Put your feet up at some points, Paul, and have a nice chilled beer.
I'm sure I'll sneak one in.
Please do. Thank you for listening. We will be back on Tuesday with our tips podcast. As I said, whatever you guys can do, share the podcast, like the podcast on YouTube, tell your friends when you're having a round of golf over the weekend or down the pub, or whatever you're doing, just mention the Golf Betting System podcast. Let's see if we can get our record podcast number at the 2023 Open Championship next week. It's been a joy. We'll see you again next week. Cheers.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the Golf Betting System, the Golf